Good morning. The hour of 10 a.m. having arrived, this meeting of the Senate Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety is hereby called to order. I'd ask members and visitors to please silence your phones. If you're going to have a conversation, please drift out into the hallway so that it doesn't distract from witness testimony. With that, I'd ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Senator Wongard.
Here.
Senator Jock. Senator Wimberger.
Here.
Jock's on the phone.
Senator James.
Here.
Senator Canoto.
Here.
Senator Taylor. Senator Royce.
Here.
Okay, the agenda for today's hearing will be holding a public hearing on the executive appointments of Janet Jenkins, Mary Beth Keppel, and Judy Zewich. Senate Bill 86, Assembly Bill 57, and Senate Bills 262, 313, and 333. If you wish to testify on or register your support or opposition to any of these bills, please use the kiosks that are located in the entrance hallway or by using the QR code located in the top right corner of your agenda. With that, the first today we will be moving Senate Bill 333 up to accommodate some scheduling issues. So I will call up Senator James and Representative Spiros to testify. And Tip. Representative McGuire and Todd. Okay. Representative Onstead and Representative McGuire are also joining. Morning, everyone.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning. Chairman Wongard and members of the committee for being here. Thank you for being here and hearing this important legislation today. So under our current state law, there are prohibitions against sexual contact with a minor and sexual harassment in the workplace between coworkers. However, what about situations where a teacher is verbally degrading a student with sexual comments? Common sense would tell us that the teacher should be charged in some way for his or her actions. Unfortunately, they would not be charged with either sexual contact, since there is no physical touch, or with sexual harassment, since the student-teacher relationships do not qualify as coworkers. This gray area in state statute requires a new categorization, sexual misconduct. Sexual misconduct can be anything from sexual advances, physically or verbally, to request for sexual favors directed at another person of the same or opposite gender. This bill would create a clear statute prohibiting sexual misconduct against pupils by school staff members and volunteers. To give you some more background, this bill stemmed from a case in Kenosha where a staff member repeatedly made sexual advances towards a student. For example, the staff member asked about her private parts in a sexual way and made other inappropriate comments, causing a drop not just in the student's academic performance but in her mental health. In this case, according to state statute, no laws were broken by the staff member since no physical touch was involved, and because current harassment laws do not apply to student-teacher relationships. Now, I understand there may be some who are concerned this bill goes too far and might accidentally penalize a teacher or staff member who make a joke in poor taste or who are falsely accused of inappropriate behavior. However, sexual misconduct goes beyond that. And this bill sets a clear threshold that needs to be met. It requires not only that the accused staff member must have knowingly engaged in sexual behavior, but behavior to have substantially interfered with the student's academic performance. Advances like this should never be happening in our schools. And I was sad to hear about this student in Kenosha having to endure such a harassment by someone she is told to respect and look up to. I've had discussions with some of my colleagues in law enforcement, and they've indicated that they have trouble charging teachers who make sexual advances towards students unless physical touch was involved. Anyone, no matter the profession, needs to be held accountable for sexual misconduct, and we believe this bill will help close some of the loopholes in current statute. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill, and turn it over to my colleague, Representative John Spiros.
Thank you. Senator Wagner, members of the Senate Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, thank you for hearing my testimony this morning on Senate Bill 333. This bipartisan bill addresses a loophole in Wisconsin law that does not allow sexual misconduct in a school setting to be charged as a crime. Under current law, Wisconsin prohibits both sexual contact with a minor and sexual harassment in the workplace. However, sexual harassment is not the same as sexual misconduct. Under the bill, sexual misconduct is defined as sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, or physical contact of a sexual nature. Sexual misconduct in a school is not uncommon. About 10% of students will experience educator sexual misconduct by the time they graduate high school. Verbal comments of a sexual nature are the most common form of educator sexual misconduct reported. SB 333 combats these disturbing numbers by making committing an act of sexual conduct against a pupil a Class I felony. To meet the threshold, two things must be true. The school staff member knew or should have known that the conduct would interfere with a pupil's academic performance or create an intimidating, hostile, or offensive school environment. And two, the conduct did in fact interfere with a pupil's academic performance or create an intimidating, hostile, or offensive school environment. The bill also requires law enforcement, the Department of Children and Families, a county department of social and human services, or a child welfare agency under contract with the DCF to report any violation they received to the Department of Public Instruction. The report to DPI must include the name of the person alleged and the school district or school at which the person works or volunteers. Lastly, the SB 333 adds sexual misconduct to the list of crimes for automatic DPI license revocation. The bill also adds that a person's license is automatically revoked if he or she is convicted of a certain crimes, including sexual misconduct. Additionally, the bill adds that a person's license is automatically permanently revoked if he or she is convicted of a Class H felony or higher, that is, a crime against life or bodily security or a crime against a child. The person's license may not be reinstated if the person is convicted of a crime against a child that is a Class H felony or higher, sexual misconduct against a pupil, and certain crimes against privacy. The intent of the bill is simple: to ensure that Wisconsin students have a safe place to learn. No school staff member should ever make a child feel uncomfortable. You'll soon hear testimony from instances where the loophole in statute has been exploited and understand the importance of this bill. Again, thank you, Chairman Wangard and the committee, for hearing my testimony in SB 333. I urge you to support this bipartisan bill and look forward to answering your questions. Representative McGuire.
Tip.
Well, thank you. And I want to thank the committee for hearing this bill today. It's an important bill. And as both the authors of the bill reference, we will have some testimony from an individual who experienced this. And unfortunately, there were no consequences for the educator's actions. But I do want to thank Senator James and Representative Spiros for bringing this forward. I think this is very important. And I want to note a couple of things. So as Representative Spiros outlined, this bill does extend current law on revocations and who can then keep a license by expanding it to include this conduct. Currently, the Department of Public Instruction does review cases in which these sorts of things are alleged or shown to be true, and revokes licenses. From my understanding, they revoke approximately 10 licenses a year based on what would fall under this bill as sexual misconduct to a student. And so this is not an instance where it's one person who has been affected. We have one story that's going to occur today, but this is something that is happening and has happened before and continues to happen. And so it's important that we're able to provide this this penalty here. I also want to just add, I guess, just the general sense that our schools are supposed to be a place where people have the opportunity to grow and learn in a safe environment, and making sure that they're safe from predators of any kind, that this sort of behavior can lead to an increase in likelihood of even worse conduct of sexual assault or things like that. And so I think it's very important that we pass this and that we move this through. If you have any questions, I'm certainly happy to answer them, but I'd also like to offer Representative Onstead the opportunity to speak.
Well, thank you, Chairman Van Wangard, and also all of the committee members. I'd like to just also thank Senator James and Representative Spiros and Representative McGuire for their work on this bill. And this is, as they've all said, is an important bill. Wisconsin's conventional sexual harassment laws do not apply to students in public or private schools, and this bill would give Wisconsin a clear state statute relating to sexual misconduct against pupils. Current sexual harassment laws in Wisconsin govern relationships between employees, supervisors, and coworkers, but not students and school employees. Accountability is, of course, critical when addressing sexual misconduct against pupils. Under SB 333, school staff members and volunteers who engage in such actions will face a Class 1 felony if found guilty of sexual misconduct. Furthermore, SB 333 would require mandatory reporting to DPI of suspected cases of sexual misconduct, ensuring transparency and accountability. Lastly, SB 333 proposes automatic license revocation and a lifetime bar on reinstatement if convicted of certain crimes against children, ensuring those who commit sexual misconduct or other crimes against children are not allowed to work in educational settings. Every child has the right to a safe learning environment, regardless of what type of school they attend. Protecting children from sexual misconduct is a shared responsibility of the community, schools, law enforcement, and yes, lawmakers. We are all aware of the long-lasting negative effects on academic performance and emotional well-being victims of sexual misconduct face. By establishing a clear statute, Wisconsin can take a crucial step towards ensuring a conducive learning environment for all pupils. I want to thank all of those who have been involved in their work in crafting this bill over the last year, but especially Carrie Pingle for being the inspiration behind such an important bill and sharing her story to create change. Thank you, and I'm sure that we're happy to answer questions, perhaps up to the chair, of course, but before or after the testimony of Carrie.
Questions, anybody? Senator Wimberger, and then Senator Canoto.
I don't want to throw a wet blanket on this. But I will. not to criticize the idea. The idea is there. Just want to pare down some language. The Part D definition of sexual misconduct means, as 1D, means sexual advances. Is there a... That's one of those words that probably could be fungible based on circumstance. Is there a corollary that you know of the definition of a sexual advance in the code? Or what are you envisioning there?
On the sexual
thing in code.
Because I can see requests for sexual favor. I think that's probably one that is going to be a phrase that can be very easily corralled. You know, you do this in exchange for that. That's a favor, or will you do that? Physical contact of a sexual nature. Well, at least you have to have physical contact. There might be a question of, in a circumstance of whether it's of a sexual nature, that might come up in a defense. Sexual advances just seems a little unclear, a term that might not be easily corralled, maybe.
Well, I'd be happy to answer. I'm kind of done.
Go ahead.
I fundamentally agree with, in many ways, the question. Obviously, our goal with criminal statutes is to make them as clear as possible so that people can understand. But as you know, throughout our criminal code, there are a variety of places where ultimately it comes down to how a jury determines.
That's what terrifies me.
What sexual advances are. Okay. When I think of just...
It's very lucrative to the defense bar.
Well, yeah, I guess. But when you think about some existing statutes that have been sussed out over the years through both the jury process as well as, the appeals process, like disorderly conduct, which I know was 50 years ago was heavily litigated and no longer is, I think that just the way our criminal code is done oftentimes is intended to make sure that when there are unique circumstances, we see whether the law can apply to them. And if we were to go into granular detail over what specifically qualifies as a sexual advance. I think that there's the possibility that we could miss coercive or manipulative or harmful conduct that we're hoping to combat with this.
Yeah, and I guess my worry is secondarily what's in front of a jury, but at least the probable cause. I mean, you might have a lot of people arrested on a probable cause of that and then win at trial, and that's kind of what I'm concerned about, but go ahead.
Yes, thank you for your question. I think that the testimony that we're about to hear will have several different examples, clear examples of what this means, and I think that everybody in the room will be will know it when they
hear
it.
Well, I'm sure the examples that will be presented will qualify in the intent of the law, but when you have a DA who's going to be looking for ways to charge, it's making sure that it's catching the things we want it to catch rather than things that we don't want it to catch. The other question I have is 2A, the phrase sufficiently severe to substantially interfere. And I'm sure, Senator James, I don't know if you had your quill pen out when you wrote that, but I'm just curious if there's if it's Ledge Council or Reference Bureau that might be able to talk about that phrase as to whether there's equal to that term similar to that in other statutes.
I'll defer to Ledge Council.
I think my answer to this question is similar to the previous discussion in that those terms aren't defined. I can do a quick search here to see if those terms appear somewhere else, but I think that the application of those absent a definition will be a jury question as to whether conduct then meets the causation or interference standard.
I just on the, you know, at first glance, it just seems like knew or should have known is something that you hear a lot and has been litigated, and maybe just substantially interfere, that is also something I've seen before. But sufficiently severe to substantially interfere is a curveball, and maybe just half of that can be used. I understand what you're saying. It's not like it's bad in its concept.
Senator, one follow-up. I'm sorry to answer your question more fully. I do believe that some of the language here is pulled loosely from our sexual harassment definition governing employer-employee. So sexual advances and the notion of substantially interfering with something are concepts rooted in sexual harassment in the employment
context. Yeah, the substantially interfere I get. Yeah, for sure. And the other part would be in both A and B, it talks about intimidating, hostile, or offensive school environment. I'm worried about creating an offensive school environment because instead of an objective standard to be met, it's a subjective standard to be met, where someone can just declare that they're offended. How do you envision the word offensive? Because hostile, I think, would have an objective standard. Intimidating might be an objective standard, although that's both objective and subjective. And maybe that's just an open discussion to be had. I don't necessarily need an answer, but when there's a question of offensiveness being manipulated in other ways in schools particularly, I'm worried about that term, that's all.
And I think as an author, I think we're open to, if we need to correct some of these and maybe change them to more clear, especially from the standpoint that how would a jury interpret or how would this be interpreted? So so if there's ideas on that, I'm happy to take a look at that.
Senator Cannato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for getting together on this. Understand the concern here. I just wonder if you can put this into a practical example. Does anything change on the school level, in the classroom, or in the school upon accusation? Other than what can be done now? Is the individual removed, or that's up to the administrator, up to the school board? Well, because you have, it's going to be quite a bit of time here for due process from accusation. to conviction, if it's there's a conviction. But what does it change, if anything, in that school premise during that time frame?
Yeah, so I don't believe that this bill changes any of the existing procedures that schools would take under this sort of circumstance. I think one of the things that it does most is that it provides, obviously, it provides a criminal penalty, and so there would be a criminal complaint, and certainly much more of the force of law, obviously, hanging over it. And so I think that that would at least informally make sure that administrators take it seriously. I can't guarantee that, and there's no new process within this bill that would change how administrators handle these complaints.
So the criminal penalty itself acts as a deterrent. Should
I would hope so.
The employee's mind or the individual's mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Good morning to you, to the authors. Question for you. I'm wondering about the 750,000 or more. Only in those areas is the offense worth being reported to DCF and so on and so forth?
No, that's we've gotten a lot of questions about this. There is currently a legal structure by which the city and county of Milwaukee report their child crimes, I guess, to other agencies, and that goes through DCF. We're actually just using the existing process. This would apply to all 72 counties. Milwaukee just has a different process for how they do it. And so we wanted to make sure that was incorporated into the bill so that we were clear that this applied everywhere.
Thank you, because I was feeling a little sales tax-ish.
No. This applies equally to everyone. It's just the way that Milwaukee reports their crimes upwards through DCF.
Makes sense. I appreciate that. Ledge Council, that's correct?
Yeah, Milwaukee County is administered by DCF directly.
So not that I don't believe my colleagues.
All just references.
Tried to make sure with Ledge Council. Okay, and then could you please help me know, gentlemen, the concept of damage or theft of the property at the school or whatever. It seems to also tack to theft of property from a school. Did I misread that? Let me look at what section it was.
What's that?
Ledge Council, was there a part there? I thought I read a part that specifically dealt with property damage. Could you speak to that?
Is this upon licensure? Is this the licensure
question?
This
is about the qualifying for automatic revocation issue.
Yeah.
This was a request made from DPI. Since we're adding other statutory language, they thought it would be appropriate to add this as part of the automatic revocation process as well.
So certain crimes, they'd like to just have an automatic revocation rather than have to go through the full hearing upon conviction.
Yeah, I just found that completely not related to sexual assault really don't. I hear DPI has requested it. I still would like Ledge Council to kind of speak to it because I'm wondering, so is that what kind of damage is that? I recall, you know, in the Capitol there was a discussion of whether or not when people taped things on the walls if it caused $600,000 of damage, and it did not. And so my question is, what kind of damage? You know, is it to a stapler? Is it, you know...
Yeah, so
toilet paper
as the authors indicated, so current law, there are certain crimes that if you're convicted of, it's an automatic license revocation. And the bill adds additional crimes that if a licensee is convicted, it's an automatic revocation. By automatic, I mean no hearing. It's just you shall revoke. Yeah. So one of the crimes being added under the bill to automatic revocation is a felony violation of, actually, it's theft, so 94320. If the property belonged to the school district, and I'll note the word felony means that it would require a certain threshold of value.
Is that like 2,500?
2,500, or okay. I believe in some other circumstances it can be kicked up to the felony level, but it's not all theft. It would require a felony violation of theft if the property belonged to the school district, is one of the crimes added to the auto revocation under the bill.
And I would just add that there is a hearing at the conclusion of criminal cases to assess the level of damage for the purposes of reporting that.
Arguably, it normally is thought of even before charging, which is why they make the decision of, you know, what if they're going to charge misdemeanor or if they're going to charge felony. I just was a little concerned because I did not have that clarity of it was a felony, and still somewhat concerned because we're talking about, you know, lifetime revocations. And, you know, I respect everyone doesn't, you know, necessarily, everyone's not necessarily a Christian, and everyone does not necessarily believe in, you know, a rehabilitative process. And I get that. And as a victim of sexual assault, I do understand the trauma of that also. But I'm somewhat concerned about the concept of just not only automatic revocation on property damage, but that something could also be, you know, a lifetime ban to your ability to have a profession. And so that's it. Thank you.
Anybody else? I just have one question. I actually agree with Eric on the means of the sexual misconduct, which is the sexual advances. I was just trying to think, okay, so what exactly, how do you phrase that? How do you...
Say that again, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was hearing that.
Under sexual misconduct, sub D, it says means sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, physical contact of a sexual nature, da-da-da. Well, when you're looking at requests, it's something that they're actually doing. They're requesting a sexual favor, or there's a contact, there's touching. A sexual advance is like what? I mean, that's pretty open-ended. Mm. From the law enforcement side of things, as having been in law enforcement, that might be great, you know, for me as a law enforcement officer, you know, charging somebody because I could just pull anything out of the air. I just think that that's really broad, and I don't know if there's a way you could tighten that up or define it.
So,
I'm having trouble connecting with that.
Part of the sexual harassment definition, we could incorporate part of that, such as unwelcome verbal conduct of a sexual nature, which would not be, includes but's not limited to the deliberate, repeated making of unsolicited gestures or comments. So, I mean, that would be considered. Yep, repeated making of unsolicited gestures or comments of a sexual nature. So we can incorporate part of the
sexual
harassment into the sexual advance definition that Senator Wimberger raised earlier.
That actually would clear it up for me. Senator Jacques?
Doesn't bother me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know we haven't had the victim testify yet, but I'm just trying to think before they might testify, getting into the specifics. There was legislation that was signed into law a couple sessions ago. Representative Onstad, I know you were on the bill, dealing with basically cyber harassment. There was a teacher who had repeatedly sent sexual suggestive requests and the like through text message, and so we had to update statutes to include electronic means, whether that was you know, through social media messaging or the like, and so the charging was able to be done through the stalking statute. Now, I think that's a Class I felony, but certainly when you're talking about, you know, there, it's two or more contacts, suffering emotional distress, certainly this would fit with that, you know, making the victim feel intimidated, harassed, tormented. I guess the issue is that you see a Class I felony as insufficient, or was there a reason why that was not able to be charged still as a felony in this case? Again, I don't know the specifics of this particular.
Well, I guess I don't recall offhand all of the specifics of the stalking statute. I'll say that obviously that statute has been around a while, and when the case that we're that initiated this process before we learned that this was something that, that DPI was dealing with on a regular basis as well, where the individual went to the police and they were told there is no formal crime that has been committed here. There's no crime that they can be charged under. And so I would hope that law enforcement was well aware of the stalking statute, and I assume that they are. And so I think that, again, I don't recall the statute in its entirety offhand, but I think that there may be just some distinctions. And then I would also say one of my suspicions is that, you know, I guess I shouldn't speak without knowing, without reading statutes. So I'll take that part back. But, yeah, they had gone to law enforcement and had been denied, ultimately.
Thank you.
We good? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you bringing this legislation forward.
Yeah. So, Chairman, I had spoken with the next speaker, and they asked that I sit
up here. Oh, that's fine. Carrie?
And, Mr. Chair, just for...
Is it Pingle? Hi, Carrie.
Hi. And, Mr. Chair, just for the author's benefit and others in the room or listening, the legislation does not require a... permanent revocation for a property damage is not one of the specific items that's listed, and Ledge Council could list the specific crimes if we needed it, but I just wanted to make that clear because I had suggested, or maybe it could be suggested that I was suggesting it. I had not.
Okay. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you.
So did you punch your button there? We're good?
Yep.
It's green? Good to go?
It's green, yep.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us your story.
All right. Well, good morning. My name is Carrie Pingle. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of SB number 333. I'd like to thank Chairman Wagner and members of the committee for hearing this bill today, and also for the chairman for being a co-sponsor. I also want to thank Senator Jesse James and Representative John Spiros for authoring this bill, also Representatives Todd Onstad and Tip McGuire. I'd like to give a content warning for what I'm going to share. I attended a private school in Wisconsin my last 2 years of high school. An administrator I went to with questions about my faith soon pulled me out of class for being impure. He required me to reveal details of sexual experiences I had with my boyfriend, who was 20 at the time. I was 16. He instructed me to describe my part in the sexual acts to him from beginning, middle, to end in sexually graphic detail, all while staring at me in an intimidating and objectifying way. He eventually isolated me from other staff, students, my parents, boyfriend, friends, and counselor, claiming he was preparing me for God's kingdom. As punishment for confessing to intimacy with my boyfriend, I was placed at an isolated desk for my last semester, requiring daily check-ins with this administrator. Here are some examples of what sexual advances this educator made to me as a child. He described his genitalia to me like its size or hair by it, and said things like he had a party in his pants with me in his office. He asked me how many times my boyfriend stuck his penis in me. He made degrading comments to me like my boyfriend knew he could call me when he wanted to be pleased sexually, or my boyfriend had me on a leash. He wrote me letters, kept frequent contact, and made comments on my social media directly focused on my sexual purity after I graduated. If this disturbs you or makes you uncomfortable to hear as adults, imagine what it was like to hear as a child from my educator at school on a regular basis. These details are partly censored and less extreme than others, but I left some quotes to not minimize the subject of this hearing. Sexual misconduct to a student by an educator is not currently a crime in the state of Wisconsin. That is why we are here today. As a child, I did not understand predatory or grooming behavior and the extreme power imbalance in this. As a child, I thought this was all my fault. As a child, I did not understand he should have mandate-reported statutory rape if he had concerns for me instead of punitively harassed me about it. As a child, I did not understand this educator took advantage of my vulnerability for his sexual gratification without my consent. One of the saddest parts to me is I genuinely looked up to and trusted this man as an educator. It took several years to come to terms with the abuse. This is why laws and systems exist to protect child victims. Wisconsin laws and systems deeply failed me. Little to no justice was available because Wisconsin lacks adequate laws protecting children from sexual misconduct. The detective assigned to my case was adamant that no law was broken because this man never touched me and I was not his employee. He stated the most relatable charge for this behavior is disorderly conduct. But the 88-page investigation concluded no crime occurred. The DOJ agreed in 2021. The closest civil case I had was a personal injury case, but I only had 3 years to file it, as extended statutes for crimes against children do not apply without physical contact in Wisconsin. Yet I'd be within statutes today for criminal and civil justice in multiple states. Due to this law void and Title IX exemption, this school board faced only a moral choice when my family and I were defenseless before them 4 years ago. Most church and school leaders do protect children voluntarily, but this board proved what can happen when adequate laws are not in place to motivate decisions to sexual misconduct involving children. Please see my press conference statement for details regarding the school and accreditation board responses. If an educator did this to a child, you know, could you accept from law enforcement and every reasonable authority in the state it did not matter because the educator did not touch this child? Could you watch the school and its affiliates willfully entertain the predator around more children in their care and legally get away with it? Could you ignore the severe trauma, betrayal, and humiliation this child endured from every part of this and not try to stop it from happening to someone else? My answer to these questions is no. I spent 4 years trying to hold this man in school accountable. This bill was inspired by my story. This law could have changed everything. I am a licensed counselor in Wisconsin now. The children in my office have remained my strongest motivation to keep going on this journey. I work with children who have experienced trauma, abuse, or neglect. It's hard to imagine any child in my position as a child without strong legal protections or justice. This will be the case for every child in every Wisconsin school until this law changes. This man can legally work or volunteer with your children today. The problem is greater than just me, just this man, and just this school. This bill creates the justice that should have been in place for Wisconsin children all along. Many states already recognize criminal conduct with children does not begin with touching them. It is Wisconsin's turn. Thank you.
Questions by the members? Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, really, more than anything. First of all, thank you for your bravery to be able to come forth and share your story, especially as a victim and it being minimized. And your perseverance. It is not easy to press for justice and be dismissed by others. And so you look in your appearance, you know, small framed and a little timid. But I need to tell you that I see the lioness in you by being someone who is willing to press, not just for you, as you stated, but for others that will come behind you. And I want to end with, I think in many of our traditional schools that are not private schools that accept vouchers or private schools, that school boards provide a slightly more sense of accountability. And so I appreciate your story, because there's a story in the news right now that happened also in another private school. And as a woman of faith, I hate to hear that both of them are faith-based institutions, right? But I really just wanted to share, as somebody who was a victim of sexual assault myself, I just wanted to identify and give you some words of encouragement as you continue on this journey for this to become law.
Thank you.
Senator Royce.
Thank you. I really appreciate your being here today, too. I was just going to make a request that you share your comments from the press statement. Would you mind circulating a copy to the committee?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't think we have those with us necessarily, but we can certainly have those.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for coming forward. It's really challenging when you have to take the time to do this. And it just seems like there should be some ability to be able to go after the person that caused this to happen to you. That's just despicable. So I think that by being able to have this discussion now, and you've got bipartisan support on both sides of the aisle working on this. I am a co-sponsor of this, having come from law enforcement and seen issues like this. We don't want to let those people off the hook. They need to be dealt with and taken out of the system so that they can't do that to somebody else. And you're in a perfect position to help other people if you're doing counseling, because you come from having had this experience. So you're going to help a lot of people. Senator James, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary, thank you for being here. It's in this building, you're seeing on questions and stuff, the interchange, that words matter. So we're going to make sure that we address the appropriate verbiage to get this across the finish line. A question that I have for you, through the investigation the detective did with you, were you able to get a no contact order and stuff in place? Nothing?
No, because no law was broken. That was what I was told.
And is this guy still around? I mean, is he still in the
education? He willfully
education?
Resigned from his position at the school last year. The school continued to keep him around, and it wasn't just me that this happened to. There was multiple other students that it happened across a span of 20 years.
Well, thank you, and that's exactly my point. By exposing your story, it takes a strong, courageous woman like yourself to do that, first and foremost. There will be a ripple effect, because I was thinking in my mind, I was a sensitive crimes investigator, and in the cases, there's always more than one victim. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to remember, is that there will be a ripple effect mm-hmm. now moving forward, and hopefully we can get this across the finish line. Thank you.
And perhaps there might be fresh cases that the statute has not run out on, so they'll be able to go after this individual civilly and criminally. So... thank you.
Thank you.
Tip, thank you. Okay. That concludes Senate Bill 333. So, next up, we will move into executive appointments. We have the executive appointment of Janet Jenkins of Fitchburg as a non-lawyer member of the Wisconsin Judicial Commission, and I will call for Janet Jenkins to testify. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today.
Push your green button, Janet.
Yeah, is that green button on?
Now is it on?
Ah, we got you.
Okay, I was thanking you for the opportunity to meet with you today regarding confirmation of my appointment to the Wisconsin Judicial Commission. As listed on the agenda, I had one term that expired in 2023. I was appointed to fill the commission spot of an individual who no longer served on the commission, and I now would have, if you confirm me, a three-year term on the commission. My experience and interest in judicial ethics, and indeed legal ethics, has been a long-standing one. In the mid-1980s, I was retained by the Judicial Commission to investigate complaints against judges. In that capacity, I would listen to witnesses, I would review evidence, and I would make a recommendation to the commission about whether there was probable cause to believe that a judge had engaged in judicial misconduct as defined in a state statute. For as you know, the Judicial Commission's authority is set forth in statute, supplemented by rule. After serving in that capacity, I also was